Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Duncan. I'm with SEND Network Training, and we want to thank you for joining us for our podcast today as we help trainers grow in their confidence and competence as trainers. And with me today is our new co-host, that is Sam Dula. Sam, we are glad that you're with us on the training team, and just want you to feel free to express yourself and to enter right into our calls, just like our previous co-host, Peyton Jones, did. So Sam, what's God teaching you about training these days?
Oh man, thanks for allowing me to be here with you, Rick. God is doing some incredible things, man, and it's really cool to see his work in the hearts of not only planters, but also trainers, guys who've been in the field and pastoring and planting churches, now desiring to become trainers. Beginning of the month, we were in Charleston, and to see that really unfold amongst local guys who are excited about becoming trainers, wanting to get more engaged, wanting to not only become better at training, but also have a real burden for it. That's really been exciting to see, and looking forward to joining a group of guys there in Baltimore next week.
Well, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, and I'm so happy that you're on the team. Hey, listen, we've got some great guests today. We have Dr. Willie Rice and Dr. Jeremy Westbrook with us from Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. Willie has pastored in Pensacola and Tampa and Anniston, Alabama, Dora, Alabama. He graduated from Samford there in Birmingham and then got his master's and doctorate from the New Orleans Baptist Theological Seminary. He's lead pastor. And then a senior associate pastor at Calvary is Jeremy Westbrook, a friend of mine because he was a church planter right outside Columbus in Marysville, planted a great church, Living Hope, also pastored in Memphis. I went to the University of Memphis, graduated from Mid-America Baptist Theological Seminary with a master's, and then got his doctorate from Southern. So, well, one of the reasons we want to have these guys on is because that church in Clearwater has truly become a church that's a multiplication center. A couple of months ago, we had Daniel Yang on the podcast, who's with the SEND Institute in Chicago. And he said that what we need to do is not just have guys plant churches, but have guys plant multiplication centers. And I know that, Willie, God has really done a work in your heart to make sure that that church you're leading actually becomes a multiplication center. I know a little bit about the story, but something happened at New Orleans Seminary when you were there training some pastors, some preachers. Can you tell us a little bit about that story? What happened?
Yeah, Rick, it is good to be with you. And there are a number of things that kind of came together at once when we were in a season here at Calvary, trying to figure out, hey, what's next at Calvary? And we had about a decade of growth, and I kind of grew up in the church growth era, church growth movement, and was schooled by a lot of those philosophies. And I think there were a lot of helpful things being said there. But Calvary was approaching its 150th anniversary. This is an established church. This would have been back in 2016. And so we were about a year, year and a half out of that, and asking God, okay, what? We're going to celebrate it, but it was also a moment when we were going to cast, okay, what's the next vision for us? So we were going to have what we, you know, a vision campaign or a vision initiative and kind of roll it in there. So there were a lot of things happening. And that became really catalytic. One of those was a story that I think I related to you. I was attending an event at New Orleans Seminary where I had a responsibility, and I was just there with a bunch of guys, and they were telling us some stories about the seminary, and one of them just kind of caught my attention. And it was, they were, I think in those days, a couple years back, just starting the Adrian Rogers School of Preaching or something with Dr. Rogers' name on it, because as every New Orleans graduate knows, Dr. Rogers is an alumnus of New Orleans Seminary. And so he had dedicated a lot of his books and so forth. And And they told us a story, just kind of as a throwaway story, that there were like, and the numbers were something like, there were like 25 guys in an incoming class of first-year students at New Orleans Seminary in the Adrian Rogers School of Preaching. And the question was asked, hey, how many of you know who Dr. Adrian Rogers is? Well, my age, everyone knew who Dr. Adrian Rogers is. I mean, you know, I'm 55, so gosh, he was the hero for a lot of us. Everybody knew him. And so, you know, I would have assumed all those students knew him. And the guy telling the story said, I think it was 22 out of 25 of those students didn't know who Adrian Rogers was. And the whole room kind of groaned, like, you got to be kidding. Because in my generation, it's almost an inarguable point. He was the greatest preacher of his age. Certainly, it's inarguable that in the latter part of the 20th century and into the early 2000s, he is probably the dominant presence in Southern Baptist life. Just an incredible influence. And it hit me. It was right in that moment where I was trying to think, okay, how am I going to spend the next, you know, maybe the last 15 to 20 years of my ministry? How the last third of it? What are we going to say at Calvary as we turn this 150-year corner? And that story just became an important one for me because here's what it told me. Dr. Rogers hadn't been gone. He had been gone less than 10 years. He's the most dominant preacher of his generation. And by the way, has left an incredible legacy. The lesson is not that Adrian Rogers is forgotten because there are hundreds of pastors who are living out the legacy of Adrian Rogers. But the lesson of that story was, hey, the greatest preacher of his age, and 10 years later, most seminary students didn't even know who he was. And what that drove home for me was how fleeting this whole thing called ministry is. Life really is a vapor. It's here today and gone tomorrow. And I began to think about this 150-year-old church that I was pastoring and realizing, you know, we think things are so permanent, so stable, they'll never change. And man, after I'm gone 10 years, they won't remember me. They're not going to remember most of us, Rick. You know, we're just here for a little bit of time. And then I began to think, what are you going to do that's going to matter 150 years from now? And if I give my life to just helping one big church get bigger, one great church get marginally better, there is no guarantee that in 150 years that's going to be paying dividends. Because the truth is, as hard as it is for us to realize it, there's no guarantee that any one institution we may be stewarding is going to be there 10, 20 years after we're gone, even 150 years after we're gone. We've all seen great institutions that we thought would last 50, 100 years that in a matter of years after one leader leaves, that they can implode or become highly ineffective. And I walked away from that believing the greatest thing we can give our life to is multiplication. Multiply as many gospel preaching, gospel multiplying churches as you can. That's the way to have dividends long into the future. And that's what I want to give my life to.
Oh, that's so inspiring. You know, I could spend my time helping a big church get bigger. I could spend my time helping a good church get marginally better. I love that phrase, marginally better. Or I can give my life to true multiplication. That's really inspiring. So is that the thing that mobilized you or motivated you to steal Jeremy Westbrook from us here in Ohio?
Definitely. you know, when we began to make the shift and say, hey, we want to focus the next 10 years at Calvary on multiplication. We had already started some things. Obviously, most churches out there, Rick, that are healthy, they really do want to multiply. They've dabbled in church planting. But what I realized was we were being mostly reactive. You know, we were reacting when a church planter showed up on our doorstep. And we had actually tried a church plant. We had actually sent out, there had been a couple of things we had dabbled in. But in both cases, I was frustrated by the results. And I realized, gosh, if we're going to succeed, we can't just be reactive. We're going to have to be proactive. And that means we have to plan for it in our leadership culture. And if you're serious enough, then you have to invest in that. And Jeremy got and I got to know each other when we were leading the pastors conference of the convention a few years ago, about this time all this is happening. And I began to share with him our vision at Calvary. I knew he was a church planter in Ohio. He was doing a great job. He had already built a young church, but a multiplying church. And he didn't come just because of the sunshine and the good weather. I think that helped a little bit. But, you know, when I shared with him the vision of, hey, we could mobilize the resources of this church to really be a multiplying church. And I was as, you know, surprised as anybody when he just jumped in and said, hey, man, I'd love to be a part of that. And so, yeah, that's what led to us ripping him off of Ohio.
There it is.
Yeah, you got a good one there, Willie. You really did. So, Jeremy, what was it about what Willie was casting vision for that made you leave? I'm sure your heart is still with Living Hope in Marysville to some degree. What was it that made you say, you know what, I'm going to leave this behind. I'm going to go join Willie and do this.
Yeah, I mean, my heart still very much, you know, I still get lots of calls from pastors around the state in the convention. But for me, it was something that, you know, Rick, in our convention, I just don't hear of churches. And you and I both went to Mid-America in Memphis, and we know all the great churches in that Mid-South region. I had never heard of a church with this kind of, I told Jennifer, we're in our living room in Ohio. I said, name me a church. Name me another church in the United States that has this kind of a God-sized vision. I had never heard of such. And I couldn't shake it. And I got to know Dr. Rice for a couple of years, serving through committees and conferences, and just knew him to be a man of impeccable character, great leadership. Everyone around the convention that I called about spoke well. And I just thought, man, this is just a God-sized opportunity the Lord's invited me to. And it was hard. It was hard for our family. It was hard for me to walk away because you know more than anybody what was happening in our convention and in our churches. But at the same time, you know, Dr. Rogers is always the one who said, wherever God guides, he provides. And Adrian always said, when God calls you somewhere, you go there to die. But you better keep your bags packed. And I thought about that, you know, and I quoted that to Jennifer, and I said, you know, we came here to die, but I think God's calling us to pack our bags. And so she took some time and prayed through that, and so the Lord knit our hearts together, and I just had never heard of that kind of a God-sized vision, Rick, and it was something I couldn't shake, and I just thought, man. If an SBC powerhouse legacy church like Calvary can turn that ship from addition to multiplication, what kind of ripple impact could that have in our denomination? To see so many churches with the influence that they have, but just focused on adding and not multiplying.
So tell us a little bit more about the vision. I know it's connected to the number 150. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, Rick, when we came up on that 150 mark, and we had done a lot of brainstorming as a staff team. What's our next 10-year run going to be as we roll out this initiative? And it was this idea of, hey, let's turn the plus sign into a multiplication sign. We've had a decade of growth. Now let's focus on multiplication, which means multiplying disciples, multiplying leaders, and multiplying churches. And you know, then the 150 number was, to me, that was a big one. I was trying to, what does that mean? And one of the questions that we came up with that was part of our campaign was, what are you going to do that matters 150 years from now? And I had thought about the guy who came and planted our church here in Clearwater, Florida, when there wasn't even a town. And, you know, this is probably bigger than any church he had even ever been in his life. But he planted a church, and you just don't know when you plant a church what God will do, because 150 years later, here it is, the gospel is being preached, disciples are being made, and that's happened for a century and a half. And every church planter, you know, when he puts that seed in the ground of a new church or disciples being made, there's the potential of ripples that last way, way beyond his life. So I thought, you know, the greatest thing we could do as a legacy for this church and God's faithfulness to it, what could we do if we could leverage our platform, our resources, to help plant 150 churches in the next 10 years? And that just blew us away, because I'm like, we can't do that. But obviously you begin to think, well, what does it mean if we start partnering? And what does it mean if, you know, there are many ways that you can be involved in planting churches. And then it became, you know, hey, we're going to plant so many internationally, so many nationally. We're going to revitalize. That was part of it. We want to revitalize some of the dying churches in our county. We want to leverage our influence to do that, and also plant some new campuses of Calvary. So it became a multi-tiered approach to plant 150 churches, 150 gospel works in the next 10 years.
So what kind of opposition did you have internally as you rolled this out? Or did you navigate everything so well that really there was no
Yeah. There's never any opposition in a Baptist church, you know that. But I'd say two things. The biggest opposition, and I'm not throwing them under the bus when I say this, they may think I am, was in our own staff leadership culture. And it wasn't, I'm not trying to throw my team under the bus. They understand, you know, pastors write checks, they got to go cash sometimes. And, you know, we'll stand up and make some big statement. They're the ones that got to go do the work. And so when I talked about, hey, what if we said, let's find 150 churches? Well, we had been involved in maybe two church plants in the previous 5 years, both of which had not gone well for various reasons. So they're like looking at me like, what are you might as well say, let's build a rocket ship to Mars or something, you know? So I think that was where the opposition was. How, we can't even do this. How are we going to do this? You know, but once we pushed through that, here's the second thing. It was when we went to our people, and we began to cast this vision. And this is what I would tell pastors of if you want to call them legacy churches, mega churches, whatever. Our people got the vision almost right away. It was unlike any campaign we'd ever. We'd done all these campaigns to raise money to build this, raise money to build that. And we'd had a lot of very successful ones. When we came to our people and said, hey, let's, you know, part of it is raising money. It's casting vision, raising resources. And we began to say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to plant 150 churches. So, yeah, there's some construction that needs to happen. There's some capital projects that need to occur. But we cast it all under the umbrella of we're going to turn the ship into multiplication. I'll tell you this. Our people got it immediately. Wow. Not only did they get it, it energized our congregation in a way that no other campaign ever had. They got so much more excited about the idea of multiplication than they were about, let's go build this building to grow to this number. You know, I felt like in the past, you almost had to kind of convince people they ought to be doing that. When I was able to go to them and say, hey, we're going to invest in this, this, and this, they immediately said, that sounds like a kingdom enterprise. And I heard from one of our young leaders this very statement, and I heard many statements like it. He said to me, this is a youngish, you know, 30-something, very strong leader. He said, this is the most exciting thing I have ever been a part of in all my years at being part of a church. And I'm so excited by that. And I heard that over and over and over again. It's almost like our people are wanting us to cast a kingdom vision that's bigger than any local church.
Dr. Rice, that is incredible. Even as I'm listening to you, I'm kind of writing down all of these notes because that is amazing. One of the questions that stood out for me really is centered around the culture that you've created, or I should say the culture that the church has been kind of the wave that you guys have been riding on. There's some intentional steps clearly that you took in order for this particular culture to be created. Otherwise, to go and say something about multiplication, which is almost counterculture for a lot of established churches, you know, you can run into a whole bunch of headache. What were some of the intentional things that you and your leadership team did in order for this multiplication to now be a part of the culture? I mean, how did you, what were some intentional steps that led to that?
Well, I think it does, it does require a change in the leadership dynamic. And for Jeremy to come, I mean, that was a huge part of it. As I said, to move from being reactive to being proactive. I think that was an important part. And I know every church can't, you know, doesn't have the margin maybe to go hire a staff member or but whatever. But you have to move your leadership culture to being proactive. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just giving lip service to it. And you're going to fail. So something and establish, you know, churches, the staff, they don't have enough. I think this is why my staff may have been resistant. They knew they didn't have enough margin in their schedules, in their budgets, to all of a sudden do everything they were being asked to do. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to go plant churches. Yeah. So I think that's why they were scared to death, honestly. So I think one intentional step is you really do have to look at your structure. You have to look at, you can't just add something to your schedule. That's a prescription for disaster. Very few pastors and staff members have the margin now in terms of time or budget. So you really do have to stop and say, what are we going to do different in order that we can turn our focus in another thing? The second thing I would say is this, the initiative, that is the, call it a vision campaign. Some people call it a stewardship campaign, which churches like ours are perpetually in every, you know, 3 to 4 years. And as we were coming up on that, and so what we chose to do is, and I've already referenced this, but instead of making the campaign about building a thing, we made the campaign about turning the paradigm of ministry. And I would just say that was so huge because all the energy and the money and the effort that those campaigns always require, you know, in terms of communication and organization, now we harnessed all of that to talk about a message of multiplication. So, for instance, my sermon series in that campaign was a series, you know, called Multiply, which every pastor's done a series called Multiply. But instead of now 6 messages about, hey, don't take a vacation next year and give us more money so we can go build this building. You know, the series became, what does kingdom look like? What does it mean for our church to multiply? And I preached, you know, all these parables of Jesus that had something to do with multiplication, which was one of the funnest series I ever had to do. Wow. And all of them lead you right up to saying, hey, and you need to sacrifice. You need to give for that. But it was really, again, about multiplication and the kingdom growth. So I would say, Sam, changing your structure, and then I would say some major emphasis, like a campaign, like an initiative, that says to your church, hey, we've been going in one direction, and this is really going to be a completely different direction now. We're going to go and focus on multiplication. And then the third thing I would say is, and we're still learning this. Look, a lot of this is still aspirational. If you came here, you'd say, hey, they're still learning a lot. But you have to, in your leadership culture, redefine what winning looks like. Oh, wow. And if I'm honest with you, I'm still struggling with it.
Yeah.
I'm still struggling with it because church growth philosophies have been so ingrained in me that, you know, learning that winning now is not just getting bigger. Winning is, you know, we all say it isn't about how many we gather, it's about how many we send out. Every preacher says that line, right? Mm-hmm. We all heard Rick Warren say 20 years ago, it's not the seating capacity, but the sending capacity. We all, ooh, that's a great line. We wrote it down and we acted like we invented it. But when push comes to shove and you start sending out 200-300 people, And people start walking up to you and say, hey, we're going to go help revitalize that church over there. Oh, we're going to join that church plant, you know, because we brought the church planter up and we're planting in North Tampa, you know. And boy, that's where it hits home. And redefining what the win looks like is important. And you have to constantly preach to yourself. Yeah. So I think those things are what I would say help us kind of change the culture.
Thank you so much. That is really good. That's really good.
Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us, spending some time with us, and God bless you and what you're doing, really. And we appreciate so much you guys being on the call today.
Hey, it's our privilege. Appreciate what you guys are doing.
Thanks, Rick. Good to meet you guys and good talking to you.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at SEND Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at SEND Network Trainers or on Facebook at SEND Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the SEND Network of the North American Mission Board.